minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. Good morning, Northern Colorado. Getting ready for a big one here today as the Denver Broncos set to host the Indianapolis Colts on Thursday Night Football. Who better? Susan and Cheryl know he's coming. They know he's coming. They can see him coming down the aisle there, getting ready to jump into the ring. Zach Stevens of DNVR Broncos, our Broncos insider here. Nobody does it better than Zach. Zach, my man, it must win, right? I mean, this is just a colossal game for the Broncos at this stage in the season.
You know, with everything that's going on with the Colts, this is a very much should-win game. You know, I really look, when I look at the must wins, if the Broncos lose this one, then Monday night against the Chargers is unquestionably a must win game. So this one is as close as it gets, but I'm not going to say it's there just yet. But I mean, Brady, if the Broncos lose this one to a 1-2-1 Colts team, to a Colts team that has looked so bad outside of one game where somehow they beat the Chiefs and they don't have their best offensive player in Jonathan Taylor and they don't have their best defensive player in Shaquille Leonard, boy, it's going to be a rough 12 days until the Broncos play the Chargers.
Boy, and Zach, I mean, isn't it, it's kind of fair to say if you can't find a way to win this game, playoffs are pretty distant, man. Playoffs are kind of out of everybody's mind. Now it's just, what can you, I mean, I know it's early in the season, but if you can't find a way, everything you just outlined, if you can't find a way to get this one done, then it's pretty scary times as a Broncos fan.
100%, Brady, in a very depressing time since the Broncos have almost 2 weeks off until their next game. And you're absolutely right. If you can't beat the Colts and you weren't able to beat the Seahawks and you barely beat the Texans and you just squeezed by the 49ers, which may look like a better win now and moving forward than it did in the moment. But, I mean, yeah, there's going to be a lot of questions just about if this team, not only, I think playoffs, like you said, is probably out the window, but is this team even going to have a winning record? What is this team going to look like? Is the offense going to wake up? Because, Brady, a lot of people here in Denver think the Broncos' offense is bad. The Colts have the worst offense in the NFL. So, I mean, that's just how bad it is with Indianapolis right now.
No Jonathan Taylor. Obviously, you outlined all the guys that they're going to be missing. That's a huge piece, one of the top running backs in the league. Let me ask you this on the Broncos side of it. I mean, who's feeling the pressure now for tonight, the rest of the season? Because every week we've had a narrative, a negative narrative about, okay, it's been Nathaniel Hackett, can't get the plays in, bad decision-making. Then it's Russell Wilson. Is he the guy that we thought he was? And then, of course, Melvin Gordon with the fumble, with fumble issues, but that severe fumble against the Raiders. Who's feeling it the most right now to get this right? Hackett, Russell, or Gordon? All three dudes, man. I mean, feeling the pressure, no doubt.
I mean, honestly, I would have said those three people are the ones feeling the pressure. And specifically, I mean, Melvin Gordon, 5 fumbles in his last 5 games dating back to the final game of last year. And if he has another one, 6 fumbles in 6 games. And on top of that, there's more pressure on him because the Broncos don't have Javonte Williams, because everything is going to be on him. And yes, the Broncos did bring in Latavius Murray, and they do have Mike Boone, but I expect tonight a heavy dose of Melvin Gordon, whether people like it or not. And this is really one more fumble for Melvin in the next couple of games, and you can't play him moving forward. So this is his last shot. But then also Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett, this offense, I think it's fair to give this offense about a month to start clicking. And you know what? We're about a month into the season, so now is when things need to start clicking. I'm not going to say they have to have a 30-point performance tonight because it's a short week. Russell's a little banged up. You don't have Javonte Williams, but you want to see some life, especially going against an average Colts defense. Score 20 points, and we'll be able to live until the Chargers game, but then that Chargers game, this offense really needs to pick up, because the offense has certainly been underwhelming, but I think it's also fair to give them a little bit of a break, but that break is certainly kind of ending right now.
What's been the issue, the main issue? I mean, we can talk about fumbles and, you know, offensive line struggles and such, but it's clunky right now. You look at the defense and you have an identity that was kind of busted up against the Raiders a little bit, but on the offensive side, I can't put my finger on it. I'm watching plays and you see things roll out, and I don't understand what this offense is about. So what's been the issue here? Is Is it the offensive line not giving Russ enough time? Is Russ not being a quicker decision maker as far as when to move around in that pocket, when to take off? What is it that really stands out to you at this point?
Unfortunately, Brady, it's kind of everything. And kind of the bummer is an offense should have an identity, especially when you have Russell Wilson. Your offense should have an identity, and then that's what you point to when things don't work, like, oh, Russ isn't throwing for 300 yards a game, and this is supposed to be an air raid offense. Obviously, that's not the case here. But then you'd be pointing at Russ and saying, okay, is it the receivers? Is it Russ? Is it the offensive line? But this offense doesn't have an identity yet. And I think the identity is kind of getting crushed without having Javonte Williams, and then the offensive line isn't doing a great job in the run, and certainly the pass game. And what the coaches point to, and unfortunately it's a storyline we've heard for many, many years, is too many negative plays. Too many plays that hurt us on first and second down, so that when third down comes around, it's just too hard. And what that means is just too many penalties, too many poor play calls to set up some poor plays, too many blown assignments on the offensive line. And really, the offensive line has been okay the first 3 weeks. Obviously, against the Raiders, the offensive line was abysmal. But it's you can't just put it on the offensive line, which, Brady, is unfortunate. You wish you could point to one thing and say that's what's going wrong, but you can't, unfortunately.
What about the tight end situation, Zach?
No.
That's been one. Okay, Eric Saubert has had some flashes as far as a receiving tight end. Alberto, is even on the team. I don't even know what's going on with Alberto. Greg Dulcich, when will he make an appearance? All of that. What's happening? And I know Russ typically isn't a tight end guy. I sure thought that was going to change this season with this kind of different offense than what he was seeing in Seattle.
Yeah, the best way to describe the Broncos tight ends right now is non-existent, Brady. And that is very unfortunate, because the Broncos, they didn't have one guy that they were going to rely on this year, but they had like four guys, and you thought they were going to get enough out of him. I don't think anyone was looking at him and saying that Alberto was going to be a 1,000-yard guy. It was really going to be the receivers and then the tight ends as a complement, and they have not been a complement. Alberto had one snap against the Raiders. That just shows you where they view him and where he is. I expect to see him a little bit more tonight, but certainly not someone they're going to rely on. And especially with just the receiver position getting dinged up, Jerry's hurt for a game, comes back, isn't his full self in week three. He looked better in week four, but that's when you really expected, okay, now you're going to finally see the tight ends, and we just haven't seen it yet. And it's you can point to everyone. Eric Tomlinson, supposed to be a blocker, has not looked that good. Alberto, he's supposed to be a better blocker, more of an all-around tight end than he was last year. That certainly has not been the case, so he's not seeing the field. And Eric Saubert, a lot of people thought he was going to be average. He's been below average. And I expect to see Greg Dulcich in a couple of weeks. He was able to come off the IR this week. But Greg Dulcich is a guy where every time the Broncos thought he was going to be doing something, it's always just been a couple of weeks later. So I'm not even set that he's going to be back a Monday night against the Chargers.
I wanted to ask you about Andrew Beck, too. You see him, the first 2 weeks, we got a decent dose of Andrew Beck, and you're starting to see teams, a couple, utilize the fullback a little bit more. Do you think with the situation with the tight ends, injuries to the running back, Andrew Beck could kind of be an under-the-radar guy that comes out as a positive in all of this?
Man, it certainly looked like that in week one, and
right,
then he's been non-existent, except one thing he did do was that touchdown run that Melvin Gordon had against the 49ers. He was in there as a lead blocker. That's where I really expect the Broncos to start leaning on him more, because when the Broncos have gotten the red zone up until that game, they've been going shotgun. They've been throwing the ball 17 times compared to only four runs. And then they said that time when they got in, okay, we're just going to play our ball, go big on the offensive line, and put a fullback in there. And Andrew Beck did a great job picking up a block in order for Melvin to score. So that's really where I see his role extending. You love the ability of him to come out of the backfield and catch one or two a game, but I don't see them really using him in that tight end role to save the tight end group.
With Melvin Gordon, it's just so interesting, and I tweeted this out. I wish the guy was more of a jerk, because it's easier to be critical, but he's not, you know, emotional and all of that. But at the end of the day, they're pros. They're making a lot of money to do this. The tough part with Gordon, take the fumbles out, And he's a really good running back. I'm not going to say he's one of the best running backs in the league, but he's a really good running back. He can catch out of the backfield. I guess his blocking's all right. So if he can get the fumble solved, this is not a bad starting quarter running back when you lose Javonte Williams. I mean, before the season, if you would have told me that was the case, I'd have said, okay, Melvin's fine. I'm good with that. But the fumbles have become much worse these last four games than we've seen. And he's been a fumbler, but they've obviously escalated to danger zone here in these first four games for Gordon.
You're spot on with all of that, Brady. And that really is the toughest thing is people are like, oh, you got to cut Melvin Gordon. He can't play. Certainly, if Javonte Williams was still healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if Melvin Gordon was inactive tonight to kind of just let him take a step back. Clearly, the fumbling is so in his head right now. I think taking a week or two off would probably benefit him, not necessarily as a punishment, although fans would like to view it as a punishment, but more just you just got to take a step back. You have fumbling issues in the past, but this is just on a different level. The Broncos don't have that luxury now with Javonte Williams. And you nailed it. Melvin Gordon is a really good running back. He's good in pass protection. He's good catching the ball out of the backfield. And he really is a good runner, specifically when it comes to third down, specifically when it comes to the red zone. But you just can't fumble. You can't do that. And one of the things, and where Melvin really gets caught with the fumbling, is when he's fighting for extra yards. That's when defenders come in and rip the ball out, and he's not the best at hanging on to it. So you know what? The Broncos have actually told him this week, which is just so crazy it's gotten to this point. They've said, Melvin, instead of fighting for those extra yards, if you think that ball may come out, if you think that more guys are coming over in order to pull that ball out, you just got to get down.
Wow.
Don't fight for the extra yards. Take 3 or 4 yards. Instead of trying to turn it into 6 or 7. But you know what? Especially this week, especially these next couple of weeks when he's still trying to kind of get through the yips of fumbling, that's what he's got to do. And if Melvin Gordon's averaging 3.5 yards per carry but no fumbles, unfortunately, I'll take it right now. That's just where we're at. Instead of trying for 5 or 6 yards per carry but a fumble here, you can't do that. This is when it also really gets put on Russell Wilson. Okay, you have to take the game over now. We're not going to abandon the run, but we're not going to rely on the running game to get us 150 yards a game. You have to take over.
Latavius Murray, how much of an impact will he make? How many carries, how many plays do you think he'll actually be involved in?
Tonight, not much, if at all. I do think he'll be active, kind of in an emergency situation. You may see a couple of runs from him, but I would really be surprised. Being 32 years old, playing in London this past week on a short week, it just does not add up for him to have a big role. However, especially depending on if Melvin Gordon fumbles, how he does tonight, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a big role against the Chargers in about 12 days from now. That's when I could really see him be a part of this team.
Zach Stevens joining us from DNVR Broncos. On to the defensive side of the ball, Zach. Randy Gregory being out for a decent amount of time. Baron Browning, and rookie Nick Benito. I mean, there's some opportunities for those two guys. Benito was brought in, you and I talked about this in the offseason, to put pressure on Bradley Chubb. And I think Chubb's had a fine season so far. Maybe not a world-beating season just yet, but a fine season. What kind of opportunity is there, Baron Browning, Nick Benito, for those two guys to... Well, obviously, we'll see Browning more, but how about Benito? Will we see him quite a bit tonight?
Yeah, that's one that I just can't get behind yet. The Broncos don't trust him yet, and that's not a big knock to Benito. It's hard, especially for this coaching staff, to trust rookies from knowing these guys. So I don't expect a huge role for Benito, even though he is one that seems like, okay, you're finally going to get your opportunity. You barely played any on defense this year. You look at Baron Browning and that backup role he's had. He has got a lot of snaps this year, so Benito's going to get that opportunity. I think it's just going to be even more on Baron Browning, and he's just going to have a huge opportunity to get in the groove, be the starter, play a lot. And you will see Benito more than you have because they are going to put him in to give some spell to Bradley Chubb and to Baron Browning. But for me, my expectations for Nick Benito are pretty darn low. He had a fantastic practice in joint practices against the Dallas Cowboys, but that's really all he's done. He had 2 sacks at the very end of a preseason game. going up against guys that aren't in the NFL anymore. So my expectations are very low for Nick Benito in this stretch.
This defense has been so good for the most part of the season, save for that first half against Seattle, and then just kind of wore down as Josh Jacobs got rolling for the Raiders. Josie Jewell, I thought 2 weeks ago he was a monster against San Francisco. He was everywhere. You got to have him. It kind of starts with him as far as stopping that run, obviously D-line, but I thought Josie just had such a nose for the ball and who had the ball against San Francisco. I'm really looking at him to be a difference maker tonight and, you know, for the foreseeable future.
And that's fair. They're paying him like it. $5.5 million for this year and next year. They're saying, we're not bringing you in to just be a fourth round pick. We're paying you to be a really good linebacker. And yeah, has he been hit or miss? That first game, he was absolutely tremendous. Picked up right where he left off last year, because before he got injured, he had a great game and a half at the start of the 2021 season. And then last week just did not look good, along with a lot of the defense. But you're absolutely right. If this team is going to be great against the pass on defense, but average to poor against the run, well, every team's just not going to throw to Pat Surtain. They're not going to have to try and test the secondary. They're just going to run the ball. And that's something that, even without Jonathan Taylor, I think the Colts are really going to try to expose. And we'll find out, is this Broncos defense, do they have a true weakness at the running against the run, or was that just a fluke? Now, we're not officially going to know after tonight, because the Colts, again, aren't very good. Their offensive line is in shambles. They're running back. They're missing their star. But tonight is a really good opportunity for the Broncos defense to have a bounce back.
Zach, last one for you, and going back just to Russell Wilson. Are you shocked at how the national media, maybe the local media, how he's kind of been perceived since becoming a Bronco? Like, my whole world is shattered. Russell Wilson with Seattle was like a superstar and amazing, yeah, and everybody loved him. Here in the, with the Broncos, I mean, my goodness, this guy is under the microscope every single week.
Yeah, you're 100%. And you know what, Brady? It reminds me of what you said about Melvin Gordon. You kind of wish that he, like, wasn't a good dude, Melvin or Russ, because then it would be like, okay, well, at least they're piling on someone that's not a good dude. Russell Wilson, he may be cheesy, he may be corny, there's no doubt about that, but he is a really good guy. And so it's like, why are people just taking stray shots at him all the time?
All the time.
Has Russell Wilson had a great season? No. Has he had a bad season? No. He hasn't, especially with the circumstances of this being his first month in a new system, with a new play caller, with a new head coach, with all new teammates, with a new surrounding. I think Russ has been just fine. But it is so weird that I think it started with the Let's Ride video that got out everyone across the country. We're talking about his former teammates in Seattle. We're talking about colleges making fun of him with his Let's Ride. It has been open season for Russ. As long as he continues to just do what he's doing of being a good quarterback but not a great quarterback, and putting out, you know, the Subway commercials, which had come out in the past but was brought more to light last week. If he keeps doing that, unfortunately, he's just going to keep getting this. But if he starts playing really good ball, people in Denver aren't going to care. They're going to absolutely love this guy.
Let's go light it up tonight. Get Russell Wilson to cooking tonight. That might be the best thing for everybody involved. Zach, my man, do you have any predictions for us? Every spread I'm seeing is -3 or -3.5 for the Broncos.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty spot on. So if I was a betting man, I don't like that, just because I think it's going to be right around there. But one thing I do like is I do like the Broncos to win. I think it's going to be a slugfest. I've got 17-13 Broncos win, Brady, tomorrow. People are going to be happy about the win, but they're going to be concerned about how it happened.
Then the saga continues, even if there's a win, no matter what, man. Zach, my man, you are a busy dude. We just appreciate you anytime you can give us, man. Nobody better than what you're doing. And just keep up the great work. I'm going to be at the game tonight, so who knows? Might see you around. Probably not, but I'll look for you.
I love it, Brady. I love it. Would love to run into you.
All right, my man. Zach, great job. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
See you, Brady. Thank you.
Zach Stevens, DNVR Broncos. Boy, a lot to unpack there. A lot to unpack on that side of it. Melvin Gordon's going to get the work. He's going to get a bulk of it, according to Zach. Latavius Murray probably won't see a whole heck of a lot of time, unless Gordon fumbles, like, within the first five carries. If he fumbles, bye-bye, Gordon. 25 minutes after the hour. We'll come back. We'll do the good, the bad, the ugly. I still have Kevin Lytle coming up in this hour. Jam-packed Thursday show. Because I got my Thursday night special. I'm doing my picks today. I'm going to do a half a show or whatever that is tomorrow. Angel's taking over around noonish or so. So we're going to have some fun there. That'll be a blast. So a lot to pack in. Short time to do it. UNC basketball coach Steve Smiley going to join me as well. Basketball season is upon us, too. We're getting dangerously close. So all that and more on the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, let's get to the good, the bad, the ugly from last night. We'll be right back.
Hear the latest on your local football teams during your drive to work with Good Morning NoCo on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hi, this is Terry Fry, author, journalist, screenwriter, and you're listening to Brady Hull on The Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
First Advantage text line for you guys is 888-530-0043. Dixon's saying he's taking shots because when you give up what the Broncos gave up to get him and pay him that much money, people expect immediate results. Plus, the cheese factor just rubs people the wrong way even more when you aren't producing. Listen, all those are valid points. I understand it. All I'm saying is, dude, we're so fresh into this. We're so new into this. It's going to take a little bit of time. This isn't Peyton Manning with John Fox, okay? John Fox was a Super Bowl. He went to the Super Bowl with the Panthers. This is Russell Wilson with Nathaniel Hackett, who's trying to figure it out. He's learning still. I'm not making an excuse. I expected the Broncos to be 3-1 at this point. So they're a game worse than I thought. But it's just interesting to me how fast it goes. Like, your image of somebody that we didn't cover every day in Russell Wilson has completely changed since he's put on the orange and blue. You know, the let's ride and all that stuff. I get it. I understand why some people just aren't into that kind of thing. For me personally, it doesn't bother me because, Angel, I've always said this about the NFL. I love characters. I love different personalities, whether that's Philip Rivers. I was a fan of Philip Rivers. I actually was because he riled people up. Russell Westbrook for the Thunder, when he was with the Thunder, always got Nuggets fans going. I like that stuff. That's all like different personalities. You know, they always said, well, if you're running back, go hand the ball to the ref. Act like you've been there before. The Barry Sanderses of the world are well respected. I love that. But I don't mind a guy doing a little dance. Doing a little Chad Ochocinco stuff. I like all of it. Unique personalities, I think, is one of the things that makes the National Football League really pop. And Russell's corny. He's cheesy. Okay? Peyton Manning was funny, but also could get pissed off. He was the sheriff. He was a funny sheriff. He'd run the show, but he could make jokes once in a while. That was all great, too. I'm into it. I don't have a problem with the cheese factor. I'll give you this, though. You lose tonight. It is panic time, I'm telling you, because this game was one we all said they had to win. I feel better about it now because of the Colts situation. But I don't know where this is going to go tonight, because I could very well see Matt Ryan getting it together tonight. It feels like the Raiders situation where, oh, are the Colts going to be there? Now, Zach's saying the Colts are bad, and maybe they are, but there is that part of me. It's like, maybe they aren't. That's where we are in this league. And the Colts did beat the Chiefs. You can't just ignore that. That just doesn't happen. Bad teams aren't supposed to go beat the Chiefs. So it's going to be interesting. 33 minutes after the hour. I got Kevin Lytle will join me. I got Zach Stevens on the brain, man. Well, it's Broncos day. Kevin's going to join me. CSU and Nevada play Friday night. The Rams are 3.5-point dogs in this game, and I have no idea where to go with that one. So we'll see if Kevin can help make some sense of that. Transfer portal stuff. Clay Millen, is he going to play? What's the situation look like for CSU? We'll take a short break. 33 minutes after the hour, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is Nico Medved, the men's basketball coach of the Colorado State Rams, and you're listening to The Hull Show on 1310 KFKA.
Big Thursday night, Broncos, Colts, ready for that one. Of course, it's going to be a big Friday night, too. The Colorado State Rams are playing on Friday night, going to Nevada. And can the Rams get off the schneid and find a way to get their first win of the season? Kevin Lytle joining me from the Fort Collins, Colorado. And we have Rams Weekly coming up at 5 today. I will not be there. I'm actually heading to the game tonight. I'm going to the Broncos game tonight. But Kevin Lytle, Chris Abshire do a fantastic job, with or without me, to be honest. Kevin, my man, the Rams are 3.5-point dogs in this one tomorrow night, and I have no idea what to make of it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm sitting. I mean, the line makes sense to me of two teams that are really struggling. Three is kind of just your home point swing, so that makes sense to me. But, yeah, the game itself, I could talk myself into a lot of different outcomes in this one, and I'm just feeling really uncertain in a lot of ways. I really, you know, most games you can have at least a little feel on, and I just don't.
That's how I feel, man. I looked at the Sac State game, and I'm like, okay, come on, Rams are going to win that. Oh, Washington State. But this game, I have no idea. But we do. This is the one that has the most drama in it. You got Nevada's head coach throwing out the rumor mill. CSU's not biting on any of it. So at least you got some kind of juice to this game on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of drama for, you know, two, like I say, pretty bad teams overall. There's plenty of intrigue in this one, and it's going to be fascinating. I mean, Nevada is, I don't know, kind of an interesting fan base. They don't really support the team that well. You know, they're averaging 13,000 a game through the first two. You know, CSU even outdrew Nevada last year, even though CSU was really bad and Nevada was, you know, quite good. But they're definitely riled up for this game. But on the flip side, they're not going to sell out the stadium or probably even come close at all. So those that are going to be at the stadium, I think it's going to be pretty hostile, but it's just fascinating. I'm really intrigued to see how it goes.
Yeah, me too. No doubt about it. And I loved your write-up in the Coloradoan about, you know, why exactly Jay Norvell left Nevada. That's a fantastic read. Really lays out kind of the specifics there. Jay Norvell, though, he's not giving in to any of this. I thought he said more about Harbaugh in Michigan than he is about this thing. You know, he told me about the quarterback carousel with Michigan. He's like, I don't really like it. With Nevada, no, he's not giving in, you know, anything there. Clay Millen the same way. But you know, this would be the perfect scenario for the Rams to try to get back on track, especially for Jay Norvell to get that first win against his old team.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, he keeps saying it's not about him and basically wants to defer all talk. You know, he said, you know, I didn't hear Ken Wilson's comments, which I don't want to say Jay Norvell's lying because I don't think it's a malicious thing, but that, you know, Ken Wilson basically accused him of NCAA violations.
Right.
No way. Jay Norvell did not hear that. So he's aware. I'll be intrigued to see if he does win to see, you know, if Norvell kind of, I don't want to say clap back. I don't think he's going to say anything crazy, but, you know, say at least a little something. Obviously, if they lose, he won't. But, yeah, they definitely know. Obviously, he heard those comments. Obviously, he knows the connections. And obviously, those players, you know, I was saying Clay on his show, you know, on KFK earlier this week. Of course, he kind of deferred away as well. That's kind of been the party line. Jacob Gardner did the same thing. But you know, internal, there's no way you can't have a little extra juice. I mean, you have so many connections. You know, a lot of the guys that are Nevada's best players, you know, were teammates with these CSU guys last year. So obviously there's some extra juice in this one, no matter what CSU, you know, wants to say publicly right now.
How does the end of the game go, regardless of the result? Does Jay Norvell and Ken Wilson, is it like UFC fighters? Do they go up to each other and they're like, dude, we just had to promote. I had to promote the fight, man. Had to promote this thing. Or are they going to be like, no, thanks, I'm good? Because what you said, Ken Wilson basically in a roundabout way accused Jay Norvell of something pretty, pretty nasty when it comes to college sports. So do they sing kumbaya at the end of this, or, you know, is there going to be some bad blood for a while?
Yeah, again, some of it I think depends on how the game goes. But I could see Jay, you know, maybe with a quiet word of, you know, don't sully my name type of thing. Again, it depends on, you know, if the game's super chippy and dirty and there's a lot of nasty stuff, then that, you know, amps up the possibility of some happenings there. Overall, and I'm guessing it maybe will be terse, but, you know, again, like you say, it's not like they're going to, you know, throw down a fist fight at midfield or anything. But, yeah, it is going to be intriguing to watch, especially depending on how the game goes. If it's, you know, a blowout either way, it could get nasty that way. Or if there's, like I say, some chippiness in it, that could, you know, add some heat to it as well. But that's, I'll have the binoculars out watching that interaction from the press box, I'll tell you that.
No question. I know you'll be there in Nevada, so you'll be kind of trying to highlight what that atmosphere is like. Let me ask you, Kevin, is Clay Millen playing tomorrow night?
I feel very comfortable in saying Clay Millen will not be in uniform, will not play, and Braden Fowler-Nicolosi will start. Jay Norvell has come as close as you can come to saying that he's out without admitting that he's out. You know, he even likened it to Carson Strong's, you know, first year as a starter, saying, well, you know, Carson missed a few weeks and it was great for him. So I don't think you can say it's the same situation if you're claiming the guys can't play this week when Carson missed several weeks. So, yeah, of course, CSU and Norvell, and I totally understand there's no reason for them to, you know, publicly admit that he's out, but I feel pretty confident in saying that it will not be Clay Millen on Friday.
That's why Kevin's the best, reading between the lines a little bit to give us some more insight of what's happening with CSU. Obviously, more transfer portal news, more guys leaving the program. You predicted this 2 weeks ago. You said don't be shocked. And I'll ask you again. I asked you last week. We could just wash, rinse, repeat. Are you shocked at any of the most recent moves that we've seen as far as CSU Rams leaving the program?
No, not particularly. I think the most recent public one was David Bailey, a guy that I think a lot of us were somewhat surprised he came back in the first place. So not a shocker there. I mean, he has gotten some carries, but when healthy, he's still probably third on the depth chart. So not a shocker. I do. I can't say anything for certain yet, so I don't want to lean too far into rumor mill, but I think there might be a couple more that could, you know, come out before the game Friday. But yeah, the roster should basically be set now, you know, once we get to this game, you know, because we're, you know, now passing that 4-game threshold where you can still redshirt and all that. So yeah, I mean, it's none individually, you know, really shocked me. The Stovall one was the most surprising. Collectively, I do get kind of an alarming number for fans to see from the outside, but overall, I think this is just how a huge rebuild is going to happen here. I think, you know, with that 4-game redshirt and ability, a one-time transfer, you just have a whole lot of people that realize they either don't want to be part of, you know, they don't like their role or they want a different role elsewhere. And so you're just getting a huge, what used to take 4 or 5 years to turn over a roster, you're going to get in 1 year. And this is just kind of the next stage of it. So it's, like I say, a big number. CSU's playing with pretty limited scholarship numbers, but that's just kind of how it goes right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that next, you know, about the depth chart. You start seeing all these guys, and I mean, they're not bringing guys in necessarily. So what kind of concern level is there when you just look at the depth chart when you see all these names popping off the roster?
Yeah, I mean, definitely there are some position groups where you're pretty thin, and ironically, receivers kind of one of them. You're playing a bunch of freshmen there, and you know, overall on the two deep, I think I said there are 16 either true or redshirt freshmen, so you have a lot of young kids. And yeah, if you were to have some injuries in some of those spots where you're kind of thin, you're going to be hurting. But again, there's you know, like it or not, there's not really anything you can do right now because you can't bring anyone in midseason. You know, this obviously isn't the NFL. You don't go, you know, sign Latavius Murray from someone's practice squad or anything like that. So you kind of roll with what you've got. And, you know, the bad of it is, yeah, you're kind of thin. The good of it, again, look at all these freshmen who are going to get a ton of time this year when, you know, 3 years down the road, you know, in theory, freshmen won't be getting that much time because the program will be better shape. So it can really accelerate some development of these guys because they're just getting a huge amount of reps. That means, you know, you will get mistakes and things that freshmen do. But they're going to, you know, really accelerate the learning curve right now.
Kevin, how are you viewing the rest of the season? I mean, it's still so early. We're approaching the second real season, or the real season, I suppose, Mountain West Conference play. But are you viewing this now more as, hey, get freshmen worked up there, be ready for next year, build for next year? Or do you think somehow the Rams can turn this thing around to at least having a respectable record down the stretch?
Yeah, I think kind of a bit of both. I mean, I certainly don't, you know, think it should be acceptable for CSU to just go 0-12 and say, well, you know, we're playing a bunch of kids, it'll be good for the future. I think you do need to get some wins, show some signs of progress. But I do also believe that, yeah, a lot of this is setting sort of the building blocks for the future and play a bunch of these freshmen, develop them, and figure out what you've got there, and hopefully, you know, and look at Justice Ross Simmons. I think he's a great example. He's, you know, each week it seems like he's a little better, and you can see his talent. So a guy like that, just keep giving him reps, keep throwing him the ball, and, you know, who knows, maybe by the start of next year, you're already talking about him as, you know, another potential star receiver. So I think it's a little bit of both. You do need to see some tangible signs of growth and progress and success. But, yeah, understand this team is not going to go 7-1 in the Mountain West and play for a Mountain West title. That is pretty unrealistic. But you should be able to pick up a couple wins because the Mountain West is just not good this year. So you'd like to see some tangible progress in addition to the slightly less tangible progress of, you know, playing a bunch of kids.
Kevin, last one for you. We opened the season kind of like, hey, Jay Norvell's done all these things the right way. He's been out and about. He's personable. He does all the right things. He's promoting his program. We said that if you do all those things, you kind of make losing feel, at least for the first season, it's not as rough. And with Adazio, even in that first year, and it was COVID year, I felt like he didn't do any of those things. So when the losing, you pair that with it, you go, what do we have here? It's weird how it's easier to take, for me anyway, personally. My expectations were higher for CSU, but I'm still looking at 0-4, kind of getting beat down every single game. I'm still pretty optimistic. I was not that way with Steve Adazio. Tell me why, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, long term, I feel the same. You know, this season started rougher than I expected, but long term, I still feel the same. And part of it is, yeah, those things you mentioned. Part of it is track record. Jay Norvell did it at Nevada. He had a really bad first year, and then, you know, immediately improved, and things got better quickly. Whereas, you know, Steve Adazio had a long track record of, you know, mediocrity at a, you know, Power Five school. So I think that's part of it, too, of, you know, it's not just the demeanor. That does play a big role. I no doubt that, you know, the demeanor and the way, you know, Adazio acted and compared to how Norvell acts does help keep some people more on Norvell's side through these tough times. And then the track record does as well, because he's done it at a very similar program. So it's fairly easy to see. It doesn't guarantee anything, but it's easy to see how, okay, year one for Norvell in Nevada was, you know, not great, but pretty quickly was pretty solid. And then you know, translate that to CSU and hope he can do the same. I think it's pretty easy for fans. I know, you know, fans are very frustrated, but you can at least look at it and see how that can happen.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that fan base is kind of still saying, all right, you know what? We like a lot of the other things he's done so far, so let's give him the space he needs to kind of build this program. And again, there is that crazy few that's like, I want to win every game, every weekend. And if we don't, there's trouble. Kevin, I loved your write-up, man. I suggest people go check that out, outlining the reasons why Jay Norvell left Nevada. Great reading as you prepare for this Friday night battle between Colorado State and Nevada. My man, I'm looking forward to Rams Weekly tonight. I'll listen to the podcast. I might be down in Denver by that time, but I'm looking forward to it. For the real Rams insight, it's always the Colorado. It's Rams Weekly, and it's our chats with you, man, so we appreciate it.
Yeah, we're excited to be back out this week. It's an 0-4 team, but still plenty to talk about, that's for sure.
No question, especially this game for tomorrow night. A lot of drama. Kevin, we'll catch up with you soon. Kevin Lytle of the Fort Collins, Colorado. And tune into Rams Weekly tonight at 5 o'clock, we'll have that leading up to the Broncos game. So that's the beauty of KFKA, man. We cover a little bit of everything, and we do it the right way. 11:52 the time. We'll take a short break. We're going to wrap up hour number one. Is there a concern brewing at Ball Arena surrounding the Denver Nuggets? We'll talk about it next.
Hear the latest on your local football teams during your drive to work with Good Morning NoCo, a Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Ed Werder, NFL reporter for ESPN and a 1982 graduate of the University of Northern Colorado. Hope you'll continue to listen to the award-winning Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
4 minutes until the top of the hour. UNC men's basketball coach Steve Smiley coming up. Tons of interviews. Jam-packed Thursday, I told you. Nikola Jokic, after the Oklahoma City Thunder preseason game, was on the side, on the bench there, standing up, gigantic ice pack wrapped up around his right wrist. And he was asked about it, and he just said, it's just been feeling weird. We don't want weird, dude. We don't want weird. What does that mean? And is there any reason for Nikola Jokic to play the rest of the preseason? You have four games remaining until they start that, what is it, the 19th of October is their first game? Are you playing them at all? No go? Not even touching it. I mean, come on. We got to... This is a big year. You just finally get Jamal back. You finally get MPJ back. And now the Joker says his wrist feels weird. That's scary to me. Don't feel weird. You got a week or so here. Rest the wrist. And please be okay for the regular season. 11:57. Steve Smiley coming up next on the other side. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy.